Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this special show brought to you with Levi Solicitors. 10% off your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. I'm Dan Moylan. With me is Michael Normanton.
Hello.
And Moscow White, Daniel Chapman.
It feels like one of those we have to introduce by saying we didn't want to have to speak to you in these circumstances.
Yeah. It's been an emotional morning, hasn't it? We're recording late morning on Friday the 21st of May, the day that it's been announced that Pablo Hernandez and Gaetano Berardi are leaving Leeds United at the end of the season. At least the club have been able to announce that before Sunday so they can be paid tribute to by the people who attend in Elm Road. So let's speak about both players then. Let's start with Gaetano. And it was lovely, wasn't it, that he saw fit to put his open letter out to the fans via us because he wanted it to go through a fan channel. So thanks to Leeds United as well for respecting that because he's their player. They could have obviously put it on their website, but to allow us to do it was really good. So thank you.
I think the thing there is Berardi decided, and that's the way things go. A bit like when we got the signed shirt from the centenary game, he just did that. He does what he wants, I think, is the general way he lives his life. But he does it in a way, he does the right thing, but in a way that he wants. And that's the way he's going out, which is only right, I think.
One thing I took from the statement was that he's a particularly thoughtful man, and we knew that anyway, because we knew about his, like, photography habits. Like, he'd drive up into the Yorkshire wilderness and go take some photos and stuff like that. So to have something so considered about the impact the whole thing's had on his life is nice, because, you know, the stereotype would have you believe that footballers are all thick, and he's clearly not a stupid man, is he?
He's chilled out in Yorkshire. I think we've had a good effect on him, and he's had a good effect on us, and I think that's maybe why he was motivated to write something like this. I always remember when we interviewed him in 2017, and I asked him about some of the stuff we found from when he was at Sampdoria, when he first signed. Some of the first things we found were, there was a GoPro footage of him doing a bungee jump, I think, and then there was a video from him in the dressing room at Sampdoria jumping headfirst into an ice bath. It's like a big bin full of water, and he just dunking in that. And then there was a video on YouTube of like a behind the scenes documentary of him. He just bought a GoPro, and because he'd been dropped, he was sitting on the bench kind of filming stuff and having a laugh. And I said that was seemed like quite a positive way of dealing with being out of the team, is that you be creative and you make a film. And he's like, no, I shouldn't have done that. I think that was a bad reaction to being out of the team. And now I'm a bit more mature. I look back on that and think that's not the way I would go about things. I was like, oh, okay. I think we got him in Leeds in those kind of late 20s years when he had kind of grow out of the wild man and moved away from the person who will go on the pitch for their debut and attempt to two-foot somebody in the neck and not really understand why that's a red card or a problem, to now where...
Which it was neither of those things in my eyes.
Well, it was. I mean, I remember the early days of Berardi, because he got he came back from that, and then it was I think his second or third game afterwards against Huddersfield, he got two yellow cards and was sent off again, and it became a bit of a theme where whenever Berardi was coming on as a substitute, everyone in the crowd would be like, what's he going to do? Something's going to happen. There's going to be blood. And he moved a long way past that to the point where during the promotion season, just faultless.
I think he's testament to the concept of just sticking around. There were so many points it felt like he could have left Leeds. Like you said, the Accrington debut. If he'd got sent off in that game and we'd never seen him again, people would have just been like, oh, well, that was a weird thing. A bit like he could have been Zan Benedicic or Dario Del Fabbro or one of those other Brian Montenegro, the kind of Chileno landfill that we got, and everyone would have forgotten about him. And then he got sent off again and it would have been a chance to leave. And then, you know, he could have gone when the 6-6 all played their hand and left then. He could have gone through the multiple managerial changes. He could have gone after the red card against Derby. Every one of these things, he just stuck it out and he improved after every one of them. And every time he came back, he seemed a little bit less mad and a little bit better. Like the Derby sending off was a return to the old Berardi, but he'd actually been so calm and consistent prior to that season that everyone thought he was cured. And then there was that one little bit, which I still blame the referee for, really. If he'd just blown for a bloody foul on him, it would never have happened. We wouldn't have had to go through that.
But in the fallout from that, there's a tendency to go, oh, well, we knew it. We always knew it. We knew that what it was like. When actually he'd been brilliant all season up to that point, hadn't he? But the tendency towards the red cards, actually, very reminiscent of Alan Smith. You always thought he's only ever this close or this far away, rather, from getting a red card or blowing up or doing something reckless when you could get away with it, far less so these days.
Well, he is the record red cards holder still after the Millwall one at the start of the season was overturned. And I think it's one of the measures of him is the way that he is our longest serving player, arrived before Liam Cooper. And for him, there were two things about him arriving with that group under Chileno. One was that he was always a little bit better than the others because he'd been at Sampdoria and he played in Serie A, whereas most of the other lot, Bianchi and Mantanucci and Dakara and Belushi, were all Serie B. So he always had that little bit more quality. He'd been around the Switzerland national squad. And the mistake Chileno made was thinking that Serie B was the equivalent of Championship, second tier of Italy will romp second tier of England, and it was never that way. So he had that little bit of extra quality, and then he also had, and this is down to his character, that when he came and looked at Leeds, it wasn't just, I'll just get paid and play football for a bit and went away. He describes it as late, says it, he came with a big dream of getting promoted, and he arrived at a club where the manager was fucking David Hockaday. So that didn't work. But then in his letter on our website, it says the dream grew year by year and it became an obsession, a crazy and dangerous obsession.
I love that line.
And that's it. It became about, I want to get Leeds United promoted. And we'll talk about Pablo Hernandez in a minute and compare him to Gordon Strachan inevitably. But Berardi is not far away from the Strachan measure, because Gordon Strachan always said that winning the first division mattered less to him than winning the second division with Leeds, because he was brought to Leeds to win promotion. And it was the first time he'd been at a club. Normally, you sign for a football club and they say, come on, we'll play you on the right wing and we'll see what we can do. We'll try and win as many games as we can. Whereas when he came to Leeds, Howard Wilkinson and Bill Fotherby said to him, you're coming to Leeds and we have to get promoted into Division One. And that is why we are signing you. That's why you're going to be captain. Your job, get this team promoted. And so once that happened, everything after that almost, it's not that it didn't matter, but it was kind of, the big one was always getting promotion. I think Berardi has managed to get himself into that same mindset of, he was brought here in 2014 to get Leeds into the Premier League. And he learned enough from speaking to the fans about what that meant, which other players have over the years as well. You hear Liam Cooper and even Pat Bamford were saying the other day, you know, the people who suffered while this club were outside the Premier League, this is all for them. And it became his mission, get Leeds into the Premier League. And that's why I think it's nice that he got the game against Southampton, and hopefully we'll play against West Brom, the losers who are turning up on them Sunday. But it almost, those are kind of bonuses. The reward was promotion done. And at that point, if he had gone, I think it would have been absolutely, he would have left quite happily and not worry about does he get to play in the Premier League? I don't think that's really been his target. It wasn't, I want to be in play in the Premier League and I want to be a Premier League footballer and rub shoulders with Harry Kane or whoever. It's, I came here to get Leeds United promoted, and if I leave having not done that, then I will have failed. And he hasn't failed, he's succeeded.
Reminds me of Andy Hughes in that respect, when he knew that was the task at hand and succeeded in it. Let's talk about the Sick Note 6 as well. Really important to remember that was the first moment where I guess he put a flag in the ground and said, this is what I stand for, when he could have cried off that game. But by the looks of it, I mean the actual full story itself has faded in the mists of time in my mind. A lot's happened since then, but essentially he said, no, I'm not injured, and he travelled. Sorry, he was injured, wasn't he? But he still travelled to make the point that I'm not with these lot.
He says he wasn't injured. When we spoke to him in 2017, the version he gave was that the story that has become popular is that he was injured but travelled. And he says, no, I wasn't injured. But he'd been dropped and he was annoyed. He was angry that he wasn't in the team. And he said he had a choice to make at that point. He could either be one of these players who was reacting to not being in the team and being pissed off and calling off sick, or you be a good teammate and you travel and you just do your job. And he's like, that's it.
He said something along the lines of, I could have made a bad decision, or yeah, something was the way I think he phrased it. And it's worth remembering he was friends with all those players because they'd arrived at the same time. There was shared language with a lot of them. And to have to then go against that and be like, well, I understand. He was almost saying, I understand why you're doing it, because he was also pissed off. But to think, but what does that actually mean? What will this boil down to at the end of it?
Where is my loyalty? Where does that lie? And it's with the club. The club is an institution rather than the owner of the club, which is where those players sided. Whether they were under duress or not, and I know we've all got our opinions about the likes of Belushki and stuff, but they made their choice, didn't they?
And he spoke as well about the language barrier at the time, that there was one in the dressing room just because people couldn't speak each other's language. It was that simple. And when we interviewed him a couple of years later, he was saying that, you know, the players who had stayed, so him essentially, but then Belushki stayed on for a little while longer, didn't he? And Dakara too. So there was a few of them stay around. It's like, it's a bit better now because some of us have learned English, some of the English players, I don't know how many of them had learned Italian particularly, but it's getting a little bit easier to communicate. But there was a big problem at that moment where in the dressing room, people just didn't understand each other. They'd had, you know, Hockaday, Redfern, Milanic, Redfern. There was chaos everywhere. The whole, you know, if you think about that summer, it's hard to communicate. And I don't know who is kind of a new fan since Leeds have gone into the Premier League, maybe doesn't fully appreciate the fine detail of seeing Sam Byram discussing on Twitter with Jason Pearce about where to buy his socks because there is no longer training kit available. And that was a big thing, that's like players saying, so don't worry about it, Sam, we'll get you some socks.
Who's cooking the pasta and who's making the sandwiches? Yeah, and it was all that stuff, wasn't it?
Luke Murphy and Matt Smith about who's going to bring in pasta, and it was Lucy Ward doing all the cooking. That's one
like
thing.
Like a bloody school trip.
And that's one thing for the players who were here and speak English and know the area, but to arrive from another part of Europe and just come to the club and it be that level of just, you know, where the fuck do you buy? If I move to Rome tomorrow, where the fuck do I buy socks? You know, you've got to try and find these things out. There wasn't a situation there to help anybody do any good at the football club. And it made us hard. It made it hard to get to know any of the players like Dario Del Fabbro and Benedicic. You know, nothing about them. Like, they came, they went, and there was really no time to learn their character or anything that they might have to say. And then when we did start hearing from Silvestri and Belushki, it was fucking whinging. But we did get that, as you described, it's this little flag in the ground from Berardi where you suddenly realise, oh, he's got something beyond just being sent off all the time. There's something there worth keeping.
I think the signal of intent as well to do the right thing by the fans is probably indicated in the way he chose to live his life in Leeds as well, insofar as he did settle here and he did almost decide from the start, no, I'm here to live. I'm not, and to have a life here. I'm not just here to play football until the lunatic chairman decides to move me on. Like, when we spoke to him, his wife was working in a restaurant in Leeds because she just, not because she needed the money, because he's a footballer and he has loads, just because she wanted to be meeting people and learning English and just having her own stuff to do, which was, It just indicated to me that he wanted to have interests and a life outside of being a footballer. And you see that he goes along to like Skylights gigs, and just he made friends with Anthony Crudson, who writes for Square Ball, and he just became integrated into Leeds in a way that I think none of those other players really did. None of them seemed to throw themselves into it.
And I think what struck me most of all, and why this open letter has resonated a great deal, is the humility. And we should probably say, I don't think he'd mind us saying, but he left us a letter, didn't he, a few weeks ago, did Berardi, the contents of which we'll keep to ourselves. But, you know, you can understand the general thrust of it because you've seen it replicated in the open letter as well. But one of the things he said was, when we interviewed him in 2017, he couldn't believe it, could he? He just didn't understand why we would want to speak to him. But then, why wouldn't we?
Yeah, and you can see some public manifestations of that on Twitter this morning. Some of our writers who've done articles about him will generally get a message from Berardi, either email or a DM, or he passes something on through us to say, oh, thank you for writing that. I liked what you said about me, which it's probably a relief that we never had that relationship with Michael Brown, for example. But he's appreciated being appreciated, which is nice. And yeah, he's a good bloke, really, isn't he? And he's also a very good footballer. Like the way he has played, particularly since Bielsa came in, has been spotless. Like he has just become a great defender, centre back as well. Who would have picked him, you know, from when he first turned up as Sam Byram's understudy, to then think, Bielsa's been talking about him this morning, how after not playing for it's nearly a year now, he just comes on in the second half at Southampton when Bielsa was saying, you know, we were struggling a bit with their strikers. Not a problem. Just goes back on the pitch. And I think I said it on the Match Ball, one of the podcasts, he would not have had a problem playing in the Premier League this year. And I think you put him in any team, you put him in the Swiss international squad, absolutely fine. Put him in Brazil 1970. He'd just do his job, and he would just do what was expected, and it might not be to the flamboyant extent that some of the other players around him might have, and it might involve fuck-ups, because I think one of the things about him is there's always been that striving. We've always asked more of him, and that's where the kind of the fuck-ups happen, like the Derby playoff one. It wasn't him, you know, punching somebody's lights out in an act of petulance. He's fighting for the ball in the middle of the pitch, playing at the top end of his ability with all his commitment to try and get the team into the Premier League. And that is when mistakes happen. If you're, some Premier League footballer on £100,000 a week with a very nice life who doesn't really have anything to strive for, you're not going to get yellow cards. You're not going to get red cards. I can't remember which team it was. It was some team in the Premier League this year who had an astonishingly low number of bookings. And you think, why aren't any of you doing any fouling? Why is there nothing happening in your team?
Where is that neck-high, two-footed challenge that we've come to know?
To be fair, the Leeds, we haven't had a player sent off for ages either, but
Liam Cooper, really quite recently.
There you go.
But accurate as ever.
But there is, there's players who find playing football very easy, and therefore nothing bad ever happens to them. And I think Gaetano Berardi has had to go the hard way to get to where he's got to, and along the way he's been knocked back and knocked back, even to the extent when it was one of the video clips, I can't remember which red card it was, it might have been the Derby one, I'm not sure, but he did the interview with Tom Kerwin, the one where he says, look, there's this fire inside me to play football, and if I don't feel that, then I might as well just go home to Italy and I'll just stop playing football and I'll get a job. But we took him to the point where he's having to do apology videos and just for getting sent off, which, you know, it happens. I mean, Billy Bremner got sent off in a charity shield fighting with Kevin Keegan for no particular reason and was banned for 11 matches and dragged, you know, in one sense, he dragged the club's name through the dirt because it was all over the papers and it's a massive scandal, massive controversy. It's a thing that happens to players when they're trying their absolute best. And it happened to Berardi seven times. Although maybe the try your absolute best against Accrington was, maybe we'll put that one to one side.
Slight exception, yeah. Well, I guess to wrap up on Berardi, the ultimate symbol of his commitment and his attitude was seeing him playing beyond the end of his contract to make sure that he got the job done, got us promoted, he paid the ultimate price for it, and still did it all with a smile on his face and a crutch in the air. So he leaves with our absolute best wishes, and hopefully we'll be able to keep in touch with him and he'll send us some nice photographs of Italy.
The picture on the official website today is him on the pitch, a man who's essentially out of contract and unemployed with a crutch in the air, his employment entirely contingent upon his legs working, and he doesn't look like he gives a fuck. He's just delighted to have done what he's done.
That was one of the other nice moments at the celebration when everyone was piling in. The camera finds him in the background leaning on his crutch, and he could almost, if he had like a glass of brandy in his other hand, you could not see more satisfaction in anybody's face. The satisfaction, I remember, his click with his cigar, and there's also Brady just leaning on his crutch, just like, yeah, did all this.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Pablo Hernandez, I mean, what more can you say about that man who, he had a strange journey in a way, as Pablo, hasn't he? To have gone off to Qatar to earn money for his family. And I think, as we understand it, he went off there without his family. Then Mar and the kids or whatever were back in Spain, and he was off there just, you know, earning some corn to pay for them. It felt like a move that you wouldn't necessarily anticipate from a footballer who still had a lot of running in his legs. So he kind of just slipped in under the radar a little bit, didn't he? You kind of went, oh, that's a name I've heard of, when he came in under Gary Monk. But he's turned out to be just this totem, this symbol for the promotion. And he's given me one of the greatest moments of my entire life. You know, family aside, when it comes to football, nobody's ever going to forget that run of form when they were managing his fitness in the promotion running, but the Swansea goal.
I think it goes beyond Swansea as well. That was the culmination of him trying his absolute fucking best to get us promoted for two solid seasons. It's almost like, it's more like the plotline of a film is this, that like the hero has to die at the end of it because he's given absolutely everything he can. He's saved the village. He's done his job. But I'm afraid E.T. has to go home. It's like, what he did for us in promotion was, it was unreal. The way you were waiting for him to come on and just fix it.
Yeah, I mean, in a team now that's got the likes of, let's say, you know, Rafinha, and no doubt we'll be adding to the quality and quantity of creative players. But there were times when it felt like Pablo Hernandez, creatively speaking, was dragging the club up by its bootstraps and getting us promoted. We need that flash of inspiration. We need that threaded through ball. We need that pass that nobody else is going to see just to get us over the line to unlock this defence.
He'd almost had the getting us promoted moment the year before as well, when he'd scored that goal against Millwall, and with the way results were going that day, it felt like that was going to be a pivotal goal that we'd look back on in years to come and go, well, that was, do you remember when Sheffield United went behind and then Pablo scored that goal a minute later, and then from that point on it was plain sailing and we got promoted, and that was really the thing that turned out not to be the case. Instead, we had him crying on the pitch at Brentford because you thought, well, maybe he's given all he can, but then he came back and he scored a really great goal on the opening day of the next season. You were like, let's go one more time, Pablo. Come on. You've got this in you. We know you have.
The way we set about that Bristol City game, and I remember we watched it together, didn't we, in the Brudenell. The way we set about them that day, I think deep down, I knew it was going to end up with us getting promoted, but was terrified for an entire season about it not happening.
I was going to say, we were 3-0 up, and you went and you had to leave the room because Bristol had a free kick, and it's the first game of the season.
But it's exactly the same as we were against Stoke on the season opener from the season before. We were brilliant, and I could see, like, you know, objectively, this is brilliant football. This is a different language that we're speaking now under Bielsa, and we're amazing. But there's a decade and a half of stuff that's gone on before this that terrifies me. And I guess that was it. It was those two emotions playing out. But if I am being honest about it objectively, I would say you could see that day that we just had a swagger about us. And for him to score that goal, it just, like, we're setting about this league this year.
It was a relief, wasn't it, when that went in? Because I think after everything that had happened the season before, it's one of those that, can you do it again? Yeah. Is the squad going to be flat? Will they have lost faith in it? Clearly not a shred of it in that. And it was Pablo leading it again.
Yeah, and the goal at Swansea has a beautiful relationship with the Gordon Strachan goal against Leicester in 1990. Have you ever seen a better goal? Have you ever seen one better time? And Bryn Law takes his place alongside John Helm on the commentary duties. But neither of them were the goal that absolutely meant we got promoted, because Gordon Strachan, we still had to go to Bournemouth and have Lee Chapman score the goal. But no one ever really talks about the Lee Chapman one as much as the Strachan one. Maybe because it was home and everyone saw it, and maybe the Pablo ones because we had to be at home watching it on TV, so everybody experienced it that way. And then it was Emil Smith Rowe, is actually the hero of Huddersfield, who finally clinched our promotion. But the two best players scoring the real big goals, and that's where Pablo Hernandez's advantage over Berardi is that the resources he was always able to call on were ability and quality and just footballing talent that makes you wonder what the fuck he was doing going to the Middle East in his mid to late 20s. And thinking,
and truthfully, what the fuck was he doing signing for us at that point? Yeah. Because we were also quite a shambles.
Something that it's interesting, Swansea fans have they don't really rate him. I don't think Swansea ever worked for him after leaving Valencia, and it seemed to sort of he ended up on a bit of a Premier League scrap heap, which is just, it is weird how that happened to him. And it's it's, you know, the best part of Gary Monk coming to Leeds is that him and Pep Clatet could call him up and bring him back.
Mainly Pep Clatet.
Yes. we'll give him most of the credit, but it is strange to think of what, how different his life could have been if he'd not answered the call from Leeds, or if Leeds had not called him up, how it would have ended up. It would feel like a waste of talent. But that's what he always had to offer for us. And some of the statistics, as we saw them, were since he'd signed for us in the Championship, no Championship player had made more assists, no player had been involved in more goals. Statistically, it was all just mind-numbingly brilliant. And then watching him, there was nobody. Saiz was exciting, and, you know, he flashed and he could do things that probably even Pablo Hernandez would look at and go like, wow, that's really good. But ultimately, just what, his mind wasn't on getting Leeds promoted, whereas I think Pablo, a little bit like Berardi as well, got into that feeling of, this is what we have to do.
And to see his tears in the documentary on the East Stand balcony when all the players were celebrating, you know, there's the footage of them all calling loved ones and celebrating in the moment. That was quite moving as well, of all the players to cry. It looked like he'd kind of taken himself off just to a little corner, just to have a quiet cry on his own, and to ring his wife and just say, you know, we've done it. And that's, you know, looking back at the other elements of the story arc, the tears on the pitch at Brentford and you know, it's been a story of tears, a lot of tears.
I mean,
the
tears on the pitch at Brentford were so severe that it was the first time Marcelo Bielsa sort of actually softened and was like, I'll just have to hug him. Because until then, apart from the Bamford training goal, it was really noticeable how cold, if you want to put it that way, Bielsa was towards players. Kemar Roofe start of that season when he got substituted, he would go and attempt a fist bump with Bielsa. And it quickly became apparent that wasn't going to continue. And that was, Bielsa spoke about that at some point. He says, yeah, I don't want my players to know me too well because they might think less of me if they find out what I'm really like. And I don't want to know them too well because I don't feel like I need to be involved in their lives because, you know, we're working together and that's the best way to work. But then when you've got Pablo just sobbing his eyes out in the middle of West London, it was noticeable that Bielsa had to do something about that, that he had to just go and, this will be awkward, but I am going to touch you.
I mean, talking about the documentary, actually, Phil Hay and I went up to Thorpe Arch to do some promo. You remember we interviewed Pablo for the Phil Hay show.
And then he never played again.
No, which is well, we'll come on to that, and the sort of sadness of that particular part of it. But it's, you know, in my former life doing radio or whatever, was lucky enough to meet genuinely famous people and interview them and never been particularly fussed by it because they're all just human beings. And I'm sure, you know, you've done a few high profile interviews as well. But the reason I was going to mention you in this context, Moscow, is because a lot of yours have been with Leeds United players or former managers, like I'm thinking Wilkinson era stuff when you did Do You Want to Win? And it's only when I went to meet Pablo that I felt a little bit, and this is a word that we picked up on the podcast recently, cowed. I was a little bit like, kind of, ooh, this is somebody I genuinely have feelings of adoration for. Even though Pablo Hernandez is a human being, he has his problems. He's got, you know, he's got a wife and kids. He's got all the day-to-day worries that everybody else has, regardless of wealth or position. And yet I was kind of just quietly in awe of him. And he exudes something because he's quiet, because he's softly spoken, but he's got that magic because that's his nickname, El Mago. Do you find that, like, when you spoke to some of the older Leeds players, like the likes of Batty, for example, there's like this mystique, this mysticism about them?
I mean, Batty does his best to puncture that when he's just an incredibly normal bloke. But yes, and what Pablo sort of represents in that idea is that we've got to the point where we feel like that about the players, because in the darker days, I don't think there was ever that mystique about Luke Varney, because you would look at somebody like Luke Varney.
You'd cross the road to avoid Luke Varney, wouldn't you?
You would. You really just didn't want to have anything to do with him. And I remember there was Michael Brown was at a... you might have been there for this. It was one of the kind of Lorimer's Bar events where the players were interviewed by the fans in like an event at the ground. And he ended up having a fucking argument with...
I was going to say, what could possibly go wrong there?
Yeah, he ended up, I think, calling... Some fans had a go at him, saying he wasn't good enough. And I'm sure Michael Brown ended up calling them a bunch of twats. And it was just, that was... and but it was... I didn't care. I never cared if, you know, Michael Brown or Luke Varney read the square ball and thought we were twats because we were saying they were shit, because they fucking were. And they didn't do anything good, and there was no mystique. There was nothing about them to make you think I couldn't do better. And that was it. Obviously, I can't. I mean, there's somebody said, I can't remember who, but there is no such thing as a bad professional footballer. They are all good. They're all, you know, if you tried to play against them five a side, you would be blown away by the fact, by the things that Luke Varney could do. But you'd watch them, you'd think, that's fucking, I could do better than that. Anybody could do better than this. Whereas Pablo Hernandez, the mystique, the aura, what it is about him is the things he can do with a football.
Because it's because it's an unknowable. That's what it's us mere mortals. We look at what he does and you go, how has he seen that pass, or how does he know to make that run or pick out that man rather than that one? And that's what blows you away. Those are the moments of beauty that Bielsa speaks about, when you just sit there in the stand and you go, oh my God, what have I just seen?
I have a gif saved of Luke Varney receiving a pass from Cameron Stewart in front of the East Stand. And as the ball rolls towards him, he seems to knock his ankles together and he falls over and the ball just goes past him.
It looks like someone has snuck on and tied his laces together, is the way it appears.
Exactly. And I could do that. Whereas the, you know, Stoke in particular, those passes that Pablo Hernandez played, it was the one for Jackie Harrison, wasn't it, where it's over his shoulder and look, fucking absolutely no way I can even imagine how I would get my feet from where they are now, or my brain from where it is now, to the point where I could even dream of doing anything close to that.
Which goal was it where he, I'm thinking, was it Stoke maybe in the promotion season, where he was in the northwest corner at the edge of the area, and then he tracked his way all the way across the area and picked it up and scored? What, yeah. Which goal was that?
I can't remember which game, which goal, but yeah, I remember because, ring the bell if you like, I was obviously Gantrywood at that time, and he was in line with us, and I remember he was right in front of where I was looking down on the pitch. I just watched him just stroll over to the opposite part of the penalty area, and nobody watched him go. And to finish that thought, that's what you want from footballers, is you want them to be so much better than you that you can't even conceive, that when you do meet them, you feel that little flutter, like your heart racing a little bit, like, wow. And it is stupid for, you know, I mean, I'm older than both Pablo Hernandez and Gaetano Berardi.
No one's older than Pablo Hernandez.
But meeting either of them, you feel like you're looking up like there's somebody who's senior than you, or something, like so much. You have to look up to them just because of the way that they can kick a bag of wind.
Stupid, isn't it? But it's brilliant.
It's the whole reason we want to be football fans, is that we want to see players do things like that, and we want to feel that way about them. And both of those players, I mean, Berardi is the longest serving, but Pablo has been here a long time as well. And they've both been a big part in the way that Leeds United has changed from a team where you looked at the players and you thought, do I really want to go in that state? And that was it.
Do I want to put myself through this?
Yeah. Watching, I can't think of any.
You're thinking of Lidvania.
I am. Obscure all others. Watching Danny Pugh booting a ball over his own head.
Well, I was going to say the one great symbol of Pablo's time is the way that they used him almost as special teams, like in American football, you know, like towards the end of the promotion campaign, just because they had such a high number of games in a short space of time that they used him sparingly, or half a game here, half a game there, because the subs allowed for it, just to preserve his legs, because they knew that there was magic in those legs.
He did enough, didn't he? That was the thing. We could get by for a half without him. He'd come on, do what needed to be done, and then quite often be taken off again. And it was just like, off he goes. I honestly imagine he went off the pitch just straight into some sort of ice bath, cotton wool, something. Yeah. He was put in something and just like, just don't move until we next need you. Just stay fit. Keep clear of the virus. Keep clear of injuries. I don't want you stretching for a high shelf in the kitchen. We just need you for the next match. I think it's nice, actually, with what he did in that period, that we do have every single minute of it on tape. Because I think when you talk about Strachan and his role in promotion, it's basically the Leicester goal that you see. And then a lot of it is just talk. It's just what people said he did, because there's not 90 minutes of every game recorded. Whereas with Pablo in 30 years, when someone decides to do the match ball for the promotion season on a podcast or whatever exists in 30 years' time, they'll be able to go back and watch every minute of Pablo and analyse every pass and conclude that, yes, he was fucking great.
They don't do murals of anyone, do they? That's a line that I've used on this podcast before, and it's so true where Pablo is concerned. It's been a shame to see him as a peripheral character this season, but it is also a reminder of the progressive nature of football, that Leeds United as an entity is growing. And I think I may have said earlier in the season that it feels now almost like Leeds United has kind of grown round Pablo Hernandez, to the extent that he's not carrying the full club on his shoulders, which, to be perfectly honest, he probably never should have been. You know, you've got to give a broader supporting cast, I guess, if you're going to achieve things. And that's very much the direction we've been travelling in now. But what a guy. And
I think as well,
hopefully he gets his moment on Sunday.
I think as the senior player in that promotion squad, he has passed what he's passed on to the people who are just slightly younger than him, people like Stuart Dallas, Luke Ayling over those years. It must be a massive part of why they are where they are now, I think, having someone like Pablo around.
He's a fucking Jedi, isn't he?
Well, he is. He basically is. So to have worked with him, he's surely going to have had a massive benefit. Could Stuart Dallas be as good now playing in central midfield if he hadn't had Pablo Hernandez to watch and to learn from and to play alongside? So I think his influence will live on for a good while yet.
Yeah, not to belabor the Strachan comparisons, but Strachan always, when he came, he realised he couldn't do anything with David Batty, but he made sure Gary Speed got changed next to him in the before matches.
And, couldn't do anything with David Bassi.
Yeah, it's fine.
Leave him to it.
Yeah, he told me a great story. I think it's in Do You Want to Win? But the first team meeting, Batty had his, when Strachan turned up, Batty had his feet up on a table in the hotel. And he looked at Gordon Strachan and said, "Don't even think about telling me to take my feet off this table." And so I was like, "Right, fine. That's you." And that's where Wilkinson's kind of attitude, then he brought Vinnie Jones in because he then took Batty under his wing because he knew he would listen to him. Whereas Strachan, Batty just looked at Strachan as some little old man ordering me about, same as Wilkinson. But he took Gary Speed under his wing and realised he was a very different character. And Speed, you know, he played until he was, did he play until he was 40? He was close enough, but at Sheffield United when he was, I can't remember if he was player manager, he was player assistant manager, certainly. And he always put that down to the habits that Gordon Strachan taught him.
Bananas mainly.
Yeah, bananas and seaweed pills and naps, sleeping in the afternoon. All the stuff.
Oh, massive fan of that.
All the stuff that Strachan was just ahead of his time so that he could play until he was 37. He instilled that in Speed so that he had all the same benefits of it. And it's been a bit, Pablo Hernandez in the Premier League has been, it always gets sort of presented as like the club could have used him more. I think it's more that time has just overtaken him. When you have seen him play this season, it's not been the same. And again, Strachan says there was a game in for Leeds against Liverpool in 1995 when he realised that the other players around him had started bypassing him a bit. They were like, "You can't do it." And that was when it clicked with him. He's like, "Oh, I feel all right, but I'm not fit enough to play at this level anymore." And I think the twin frustration for Hernandez will be not being picked by the manager and then also not being able to do the things that he wanted to do. And he's had all those little injuries. Like at the moment, Bielsa is talking about we're monitoring his fitness, we're trying to get him in condition to play. And I think that might be with the reason he won't have played against Southampton when Berardi came on, is because they think, well, you know, if he snaps his hamstring in Southampton, it's not going to be any good for Elland Road on Sunday. So he's had all that to deal with, and it's but there's nothing you can do against time.
No.
And that's kind of the battle he's had this season. I think maybe some of the frustration when he was angry about being subbed at the start of the season, there's a lot more to it than just that bastard on the bucket has taken me off.
And, you know, a lot of things in football end badly or in an underwhelming fashion. You know, Howard Wilkinson was essentially booed off the pitch, around the running track anyway, at Wembley. But looking back, we don't remember that about him. We remember the league title triumph and the promotion. And the same goes for Pablo. In 5 years' time, in 10 years' time, nobody's going to think one moment about an under-par season now. Everyone is going to think of him like the mural, which is in his sports bra. With his shirt off, scoring that goal at Swansea. And that is what football is about. It's about moments, and it brings us back to where we started with this, which is that he provided one of the greatest moments of my entire adult life. And it was just a bag of wind that he kicked into a net in Wales.
And Sunday, low-key as it will be necessarily, is something more than we've had with other players. I'm sure Strachan just went halfway through a season. David Batty was in a fight with Blackburn 1 week on a substitute appearance after 6 weeks out injured. The next week he'd gone to sign for them. McAllister and Speed were both sold summer of 1996 without anybody knowing that they would be going. So there was never that occasion to say.
Tony Yeboah shirt falling out.
I guess Beckford was probably the last one who had an actual send-off because he scored that goal and then we knew that was it, didn't we?
And then he came back with Leicester and we gave him another one. And then he came back again and we gave him another one. It's a Preston and we gave him another one. And I mean, when McAllister came back, he got booed because everyone thought he'd gone to Coventry for the money, which to an extent he had, but he also got sick of the takeover shenanigans at Leeds. But you don't always get those tidy, nice send-off, thank you very much, cheer everybody on finishes. Rod Wallace, you know, just played on for 5 years after winning the title and then went on a free transfer to Rangers. There was nothing, there was never a big thank you, never a big moment. So we're actually quite lucky that on Friday we say, right, these two players, this is, they're off Sunday. Make sure if you're there, you can show them your appreciation.
Yeah.
If you're not there, you're not missing out on anything that we haven't had previously. And it would be nice. I mean, testimonials have kind of gone out of fashion. And I know, obviously, the Pandini makes it all much more complicated than it was. But
you're saying we're going to Castle, aren't you?
I mean,
Why not? Well, if you are a long-time listener to the podcast, you'll be aware that we did the booze baton, which was just a bit of fun around the promotion. We said at the start of the season, the promotion party will pass from city to city, hand to hand, depending on who beats who. It actually split off for complicated reasons related to Liverpool being in Europe. So we ended up with a European one in Munich and the domestic one in Southampton. So we'll have to go do the Southampton one at some point where we just go and have a party. We'll do a podcast, whatever it might be. Go maybe see some football. Let's move the Munich one to Castellón.
I think, I mean, maybe the Munich connection is in some way correct here, because the club organised that game against Bayern Munich that couldn't happen because of the pandemic. Just sack that off. Fuck those lot. Honestly.
I mean, it's going to be a hard sell with my wife, but should we just do both?
Well, yeah. But fuck Bayern Munich off.
I do really like Munich.
We'll play 1860.
Yeah, well, exactly. Get Pablo back, though. Get all the promotion team back together. Have them play against someone else.
Ben White can have a holiday in Spain with his mate Calvin.
Exactly. But get all that lot back at Elland Road when it's full. There'd be a huge appetite for it, I think, to see that team off.
It used to be that testimonials were 10 years service. And because wages were not considerably higher than they were for anybody else doing any kind of job, and you only had a short career.
And there weren't 100 televised games a week to work on either as a pundit.
Yeah, so it was to put a check in the player's pocket and send them out the door. Gary Kelly was probably one of the first to change that when his testimonial was to raise money for his sister's cancer charity. And Lucas Radebe also did one for charity as well. So instead of regarding them as testimonials for long service, institute charity matches. I mean, all the pre-season friendlies and tours that are all done for financial gain and whatever the fuck we went to Myanmar for, charity matches to pay tribute to a player who you liked or players that you liked, that raise some money for a good cause and get the players fit ahead of the new season. Everything works together. Why don't we do that? And you can build guest teams. It always used to be the players whose testimonial it was would kind of hand pick an opposition team. It would always be Cesspod's select 11, and he would pick 11 players to play against his team. I don't know why he came to mind. It was Bradford versus Cesspod's All Stars. And they would all turn up. So you could have like, oh, Ben White, I want you to come and just play at this game and do it all that way. Bring them all, but bring Pontus Janssen back. He won't have a game with Brentford. So
and we will still go to Castellón, because part of the reason we want Leeds to get into Europe is essentially just to go to a European city and have a bit of a piss up and watch a game of football. And we can do that without Leeds United.
As long as they have a public square filled with garden furniture, nothing can possibly go wrong.
Let's bring it back to where we started then, which is just to say thank you to Gaetano Berardi and Pablo Hernandez for your time at Leeds United. Both legends in their own rights, part of a legendary squad, and we say thank you for feeding our crazy and dangerous obsession. We appreciate it. We'll see you in a bit.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.